which separates mediocrity from success is the discipline to do the things that you have to do even though you don't want to do it. Stephen Redgrave, by the way, when I read several interviews that he gave, made this mention, and if you don't think this takes discipline, he was rowing every single Christmas day in his career as a professional rower. So I'd say that takes discipline. I want to talk about greatness, what it takes to be the best. And greatness is not trying to make yourself look great. Greatness takes time. It takes talent, your innate talent. It takes treasure. Your treasure is your own distinct personality. And it takes industry involvement and commitment. You just had your current state NAIFA president up here, as well as the SFS president, I'm not sure if he was president or not, I'm sorry, up here talking about why it's important to be involved. So this is not a commercial for NAIFA, but I'm going to say it anyway. NAIFA is important because of its political advocacy component. If you want to protect what you do for a living, then you better get involved in the association that protects you, protects the products and services that you sell. And if you don't think that we have problems, you better start reading what's going on Capitol Hill. Inside buildup of life insurance, they're going to look at it again next year. How many times have they done that in the last 20 to 25 years? You have to be involved in your association. If you're not a NAIFA member, that means you're riding on my back. And I'm getting tired of that. Okay? Every single person in here, if you're engaged in the full-time profession of being a financial advisor in the life insurance-based financial services business, every single one of you in here should be a NAIFA member. End of commercial, but that's how strong I feel about it. I was president of my local NAIFA. I was president of my local SFSS chapter and president of my local estate planning council. So I've been involved. If you want to be great, if you want to be the best at something, you have to be involved in your profession. You have to be involved in your profession. You see, if you're just a member of an association, if you're just a member of MDRT, all you have to do is write a check. To me, that encourages mediocrity. So, for anyone in here that just writes a check to NAIFA, or to MDRT, if you're a member, and doesn't get involved, frankly, you're encouraging yourself to stay mediocre. Can I get a show of hands in here? Did anybody in here who was in the financial services profession, is there anybody in here that got into the business to be mediocre? Can I see anybody's hand? I don't see a hand go up, right? That proves my point, because when you're involved and committed, if you're involved and committed in anything you do, you see that encourages excellence. When you're excellent at something, you have the opportunity to do things you never thought possible. So I hope today I can give you just a few tidbits, a couple little ideas or concepts that maybe can help you on your journey. There are three defining events in my life that have sort of formed the person that I am today, that have kind of molded me. And the first had to do with the death of my financial partner. Some of you in here, I know, have been around long enough to know that in 1991, a company called Mutual Benefit Life, which at that time was about a 140-year-old mutual life insurance company, one of the oldest in the United States, basically went bankrupt. They had about three different sets of books. The books that they wanted to show everybody how great they were doing and how healthy they were, and a couple other set of books that showed that they had over 60% of their assets invested in real estate. And it wasn't very broad in terms of the investments. They had a lot of money in a few different properties. And of course, I don't know about you, do you remember the 90s? Real estate wasn't exactly doing well, and it started taking a deep dive. So I had been in business for a little over 9 years. I was doing well. I was an MDRT member. I was growing my business. And all of a sudden, in July, I open up that the New York Times had the best article to read that my financial partner, somebody that I had hitched my wagon to, had failed. And it ultimately did fail and went into receivership, and the assets ended up being sold and split off. So what do you do when your financial partner dies? Imagine your clients opening a newspaper. You have been, in my case at that time, I was a career agent with Mutual Benefit Life. So imagine when my clients opened up the newspaper to find out that the company that they had placed their life insurance or disability insurance or annuities that they had placed with all of a sudden was essentially bankrupt. How would you feel? I don't think you'd feel too good. And you can imagine the calls that began. So it was truly a financial disaster. All right. So I think certently as Mike Schlappi spoke about today, you know, a lot of times disasters turn into new challenges and also can present new opportunities. So what did I learn? What lessons did I learn from this? And, you know, what beliefs that I have, you know, what helped? And did they help? Well, here's what I learned from this part of my life. Number one, this is not rocket science, folks. This is not at all. This is the stuff we should be doing and paying attention to every day. The first thing that's important when a company that you're representing goes bankrupt is communication. At that time, we didn't have cell phones, or if they were, they were gigantic devices that you carried around in a suitcase. We didn't have email. The only thing we had was a landline. So I spent the first 11 days after this had come out in the newspaper, basically, if I could call it 24 hours a day, I would, because when I wasn't on the phone, I was a mess, as you can imagine. I stayed on the phone for 11 days to contact every single client that I had. What do you tell them? You basically tell them, look, this is what's happened, but no major life insurance company ever has failed to pay a claim, a death claim, a disability claim. I'm talking about something that's not litigated. No major company has ever failed to pay a claim. That was the first message I could get out that quickly. And that just basically put people, you know, at ease for that particular moment in time. So phone calls became the lifeline. That was very hard. I mean, I was 35 years old. I had one child. I had one on the way. I had just purchased my brand new home with a much larger mortgage. So I was pretty nervous. There was a lot going on. Second, about communication is appointments. At this time, after the 11 days were over, I then spent the next 4 months going to see every single one of my clients. Every single one. I don't know how many appointments I had each week. I just sort of lost count. But I made a commitment to do that. Because once you do that, here's what happened. Even though here's a company that goes into financial chaos, you can all see what happened to AIG. You know, I mean, just at one time, how it can happen so quickly. The thing that I learned about the appointments is that I had created trust with my clients. They trusted me. So they knew, even though something like this had happened, that they trusted me and they said, look, we're going to stay with you. Whatever happens, we'll deal with it at the time. So that was very important. Today, it would be very easy if something happens. You type up an email, you send it out to your list, and boom, it's instantaneous. I wish I had had it then. You also understand or develop, if you don't have it already, a sense of urgency and a concern for others. I found out that that urgency is very, very important, and frankly, my clients really appreciated it. They were glad that I was concerned enough about them to stay on the phone for 11 days to get to them. What does it take? Well, it takes persistence. I don't need to talk to anyone about that in here. If you're going to make it in this profession, you have to be persistent at what you do. Part of what I had to do, as I mentioned, was to educate my clients as best I could. Everything was just happening, you know, days at a time. You get new information, just like the media feeds you every day. It's very difficult to deal with people when the news is constantly changing. But that's why if you can convey that sense of urgency and the concern that you have with people, that is one of the things that can get you through a crisis like this. And of course, you have to be tenacious. And you have to be very strong as an individual. You have to be able to accept rejection, as we all do, but you have to stay very strong at that time. Not only did I have to stay strong for my clients, I had to stay strong for my family. What do you think they thought? And then, of course, as I mentioned, relationships built on trust. This is the key, you all. This is the key to our profession. This is it, is relationships built on trust. That's it. If you can build those, I don't care what the environment is. I don't care what the laws do. I don't care what the regulatory or compliance environment is. If you can create relationships built on trust, you will always have a business. Now, it may differ, it may change, and I assure you it will change. But that's the key. It's the key to career success. And in order to build these kind of relationships, you better love what you do. I will say this, if there's anyone in here, particularly those that are in their early years, if you don't really love what you do, I would suggest this. Go find another job. Another career, because guess what? It's going to get tougher. You think compliance and the regulatory environment is tough now? Just wait. Just wait. Because what's happened in the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, if any of you all have ever read about that sort of regulation, it's coming our way. And it'll come our way in the next few years. So it's not going to get easier. You have to think as a business owner. We're not salespeople. You're not a salesperson. You are a sole proprietor or a partner. You're a business owner that just decided that you wanted to get into this profession. You chose this as your career. If you begin to think of yourself as a business person and not a salesperson, if you already don't, your life will change, and your career will change, and your business will change. The next is clients, not customers. I have never called anyone I work with a customer. How many people in here call the people they work with customers? Be truthful. How many? okay? I'm not sure. There may be some hands that need to go up, but here's the thing. I've never said the word customer. I'm not Sears. I'm not JCPenney. I'm not Macy's. I do what a lawyer does. I do what an architect does. I do what a real estate developer does. We provide professional advice. We provide professional financial services. So why wouldn't you call the people you deal with your client? Now, during this crisis, I will tell you, there is a difference between having a customer and a client. If I had had customers, I assure you, most of them would have gone another way. As it turned out, I retained over 95% of my clients. So. And finally, you should be a consultant. Consultative practice, it's what you really should be doing. You're not selling products. You're selling solutions to problems. If you think of yourself as a problem solver, not a product provider, and it's a very different mindset. If you did, and John talked about it in his talk, you have to be a problem solver first in order to know what to do with the people and the businesses that you work with. So it's incredibly important. The second defining event was the advent of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. I'm not going to go into a lot about my story because, frankly, it's still very upsetting. I can only tell you that I basically almost lost everything that I had, that I owned. You think it's an act of nature. Actually, it's not an act of nature. It was an act of the Army Corps of Engineers building faulty levees, which broke. So it caused me to move to another city and live for 4 months. I lost almost everything in my home. My home had 6 feet of water in it for 3 weeks. I had to sell it. It didn't know if when I returned to New Orleans, none of us did, if we were going to have a business to return to, number one. We didn't know who was going to come back, who was still there. We had no cell phone usage. All the cell phone towers were destroyed. So in a lot of cases, you couldn't even get in touch with people. So imagine that kind of situation. All right, so what do you learn from something like this? The first is, all of us need help at times. I'm the kind of guy, I never asked for help for anything. When I got into this industry, in this profession, I was supposed to be trained. I didn't get any training. I had no training. I started, I had no training. I simply had to pick up bits and pieces from other people in my office, other producers in my office, who, by the way, every single one of them was an MDRT member. So what they did was to give me advice and tell me this is the kind of thing you should be doing. But I did it all myself. I got not one lick of sales training, period. That's why it took me 3 months to get the guts and the courage to go out on my first call. I simply was scared because I didn't know anything. So we all need help at times, and that's what this event caused. Number one, when somebody says they want to help you, you accept it. And I know in this community, this is a very giving and caring community. And I'm not telling you anything different, but it was different for me because I had never wanted help from anybody in my life. And when people want to help you, you really gain strength from that. And a lot of the people that came to my aid were my friends from MDRT. They were the ones that really helped me through this. And of course, you find out how important your family, your friends, and your colleagues are when you're facing a terrible time. When you have tragedy, you can't overcome the adversity that you deal with, and it'll present new challenges. But in order to overcome adversity, it was kind of interesting what you find out. The first thing was the power of the human mind. Most of you all have heard a statistic that we only use maybe 10 or 15% of our total capacity in our mind. I will tell you, I think I learned to use a bit more of that capacity, because when you're put in a vice, you figure out real quick the things that you have to do. The second is personal and business emergency plans. After that event, if anything else comes our way, we've got not only our office, but at my home, we have everything in order so that if we ever have to leave again, we take everything with us, because that particular event, we were away for a weekend and all we had was a couple of changes in clothes. So we really did lose everything. So I just tell you to make sure. John Marshall was talking about his list of things that you should do, particularly when you're talking about your own estate planning or your clients. It's very, very important. Here's the irony. In overcoming adversity, all the things that I had to overcome, very interesting thing happened. I spent the better part of 2005 trying to rebuild, or 2006, just trying to rebuild what I had. And an interesting thing happened. In the last 3 years, I've had my very best years in the business. So, I didn't want this to happen earlier in my career, by the way, but, you know, you do learn from it. Quitting's never an option. Someone talked about that before. Don't give up on your dreams. And if your dreams are stopped, this is important. Have the courage to change your dreams if you encounter a roadblock. I had to totally reinvent the type of practice that I had. It wasn't what I wanted, it's what I was forced to do. So don't ever get scared to change when you think you've hit a plateau or you're wondering, where do I go? Have the courage to change it, but do it in a very careful way. And the last is certainly my MDRT membership and how that's changed lives. And you saw a bit of that on the video. MDRT is all about productivity. It's about how we help our members build consistent habits, how we focus. We help our members focus on their unique abilities to make them more productive, how to help them manage time and become more efficient, how to prospect, and the fact that activity always breeds activity. It's the passion to help others, giving back to your profession and your community, which I already mentioned earlier. Solving problems, sharing with your peers. We have a saying, it's called sharing and caring with each other. There's no other place in the world where you can go and share ideas and develop friendships with somebody in China or Japan or Korea or Australia or New Zealand, people that can really help you in your career. Because you see, we're all alike, really, in the same way. It doesn't matter where you live. I've traveled all over the world. It doesn't matter the culture. Every single person in this business has got the same thing in common, and that's the heart, because we care about people. It's the same all over the world. And MDRT is an exclusive community. You got to qualify to join. But it depends. Do you want to be among the best of the best? Would you like to see your productivity increase? Would you like to be among a lot of people that really are trusted advisors, that are entrepreneurial in their thinking? They're ordinary people. I'm no different than anybody in here. I just happened to latch on to something that helped change my life. But people at MDRT are ordinary people doing extraordinary things. Just like John Marshall Lee, who has spent a lot of his adult life giving back to others all over the world. And of course, we're professionals and we live by a code of ethics. And if anybody is a member of MDRT and they've read our code of ethics, and people say, oh, you're just, you know, code of ethics, what's that? Well, guess what? We nail people if they're being unethical. We can get rid of them. We can terminate their membership. We can suspend it. We can do whatever we want if they don't meet that professional code of ethics. And of course, enrichment, we've talked a lot. You've heard about the whole person in the MDRT Foundation, emphasis on family time, which, by the way, that was created by Rulon Rasmussen when he was president. And I had the pleasure of working with him on a committee a few years ago to revise that. And of course, there are annual meetings, and you got a taste of that. There is no better meeting anywhere in the world. I don't care what business you're in, than our annual meeting. You come to an MDRT annual meeting, you qualify as an MDRT member, or get involved in our mentorship program, where if you're not able to qualify right now, but you can be mentored, you can become an aspirant of a mentor, you can actually attend the meeting if you just achieve 50% of the production. MDRT is the premier association of financial professionals. I would not be standing here today if it wasn't for MDRT. I might have just turned out to be an ordinary financial advisor, just somebody who was mediocre, but it's because I went to a local NAFA meeting where I first heard about MDRT and was lucky enough to be among a bunch of MDRT members in a very small general agency at that time in New Orleans. I was luckier than I thought, but I would never want anybody to have to go through what I did in not getting trained. That was not a great thing. So, the point is, if I can overcome adversity, so can you. And I hope some of the things today that perhaps you've heard here, just one thing, maybe that one thing can change your life. Thank you.